Welcome to the Sports Law Biz Podcast, dedicated to helping people better understand the law and business of sports. I'm your host, Peter Ott, and we've got a lot to talk about here today, so why don't we just jump in? Hello, this is Peter Ott with the Sports Law Biz Podcast. I'm here today with Justin Sievert, a founding partner of the law firm Sievert Worley, LLC. As chair of the firm's college sports practice, he represents clients on regulatory and legal issues, including NCAA infractions investigations, Title IX, NCAA compliance, and a wide variety of athletics-related business transactions. He's also a nationally recognized sports legal expert and has served as a contributing writer on sports law issues for the Sporting News and is regularly quoted by national media outlets, including, among others, the New York Times, the Miami Herald, Forbes, Law 360, and Bloomberg BNA. Also, Justin has served as a sports law professor at the University of Tennessee College of Law and has taught other graduate and undergraduate level courses on NCAA and NAIA compliance, legal and ethical issues in athletics administration, labor and employment law, and business law. So it's good to have you here with us today, Justin.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be on.
So, you know, I just gave a bit of a background on you, reading your resume kind of thing, but can you give us any other information about your background that we should be aware of?
Yeah, sure. So I kind of grew up all over the place. I was born in Iowa, lived in Iowa, Michigan, and New York growing up. Ended up going to Union College in New York. I was a football and track and field student athlete there. After I graduated, I kind of had the decision if I wanted to go to law school or not. I ended up applying to a bunch of schools, and at the last minute, I was basically like, I'm not ready to do this yet. So I ended up taking a graduate assistant position at St. Lawrence University. So I coached track and field up there and also received my master's in education. And by the time I finished that, I was ready to go to law school. So I went to the University of Miami, wrapped up there in 2008. And then 10 years later, I'm practicing law, and I have a family of five with my wife, who's also a lawyer. She's an assistant U.S. attorney here in Tennessee. And we have two sons that are 4 and 2 and a dog. So a pretty typical family setup we have.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's great. One other thing that I failed to mention originally when I was Googling you in preparation for this interview, I found a video of you lifting an incredibly heavy-looking log. So I think you do some kind of strongest man kind of competitions as well. Is that true?
I do. I am a strongman athlete, I guess you'd say. I competed at World Strongest Man last year for my weight class. I ended up finishing 18th in the world with people from all over, so it was a good time. I've been doing it probably for 5 or 6 years now. It's just kind of a side hobby. It's a little different than practicing law. So yeah, that's one of the things I do in my spare time. I have a nice gym in my garage, and I go out there and I get things done.
Okay. Well, yeah, like you said, you're a typical family, but I guess you have a real strong dad. So, so well, great. Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks again for coming on here. Today, we're going to just get to know you to talk about how you started your own law firm and built a college sports law practice. We previously had your partner, Dan Worley, on the podcast a while ago, and so now we're getting the full law firm experience from Sievert Worley. So can you give us a little background on how starting a law firm came to you and what made you decide to pursue that?
Yeah, so I mean, I kind of went to law school, I think, with the idea that a lot of people who want to be involved in sports go with, and that is, you know, you go to law school and then you get a job in sports and you kind of go on your way from there. So I kind of went along that path. After I graduated law school, I went back to my alma mater and I worked there as an athletics administrator for a year. And I did everything you do in an entry level position. I worked in compliance, I worked in facilities management, business affairs. I basically did everything I could to get experience, and I parlayed that into an opportunity at Brown University. So I worked there in their compliance office and also managing up their club sports program. And then at that time, my then girlfriend, now wife, who I went to law school with, she was still in Miami practicing at a firm down there. And just given that long distance aspect, you know, one of us had to move. So I went back to Florida looking for a job, and I ended up going to a small boutique law firm that primarily was involved in college athletics. So I worked there for what turned out to be 5 years, and I worked there through our move from Florida to Tennessee. And then a couple of years ago, I decided I was ready really to do my own thing, to kind of try out some some different things and to really try to see if I could have my own law practice.
Okay. And so, you know, you have different experiences. You've worked, it sounds like, for universities as well as an already existing law firm. How would you say that working at your own law firm is different from working at an existing one?
It's a lot different. I think, you know, the first thing and is really with my old firm, we did primarily work in college athletics on the regulatory side. That's, you know, NCAA enforcement work, compliance work, Title IX work. But we didn't do a whole lot of work on the transactional or the business affairs side. And I really wanted to kind of, you know, demonstrate my expertise and work with clients on that aspect of college sports as well. So that was one of the first things that was different, is I wanted to really make sure I was, you know, working in other areas, I was interested in other areas, I thought I could provide value. But the biggest difference, I think, in having your own law firm and working for a firm that's already established is that, you know, no one's really giving you any work. If you don't generate the work for your firm, then you simply aren't going to get a paycheck. So when you start off, you might have, you know, weeks where you're working, you know, 60, 70 hours a week and really not making, you know, a dime. So that's really the different part. But at the same time as well, you also have the flexibility to kind of operate a legal practice based on your terms. You know, I think from a professional standpoint, to me, that really meant kind of stripping down the traditional framework of a law firm and kind of setting it up in a way that I thought made more sense to both the lawyers and also to the clients. And that's kind of what we've done at Siever Worley, is really kind of change the traditional model and kind of operate with a few core guiding principles that we thought were most important.
Yeah, no, and that's something I've been thinking about a lot lately. I've been working for 3 years at a large international law firm, and you know that has a lot of benefits to it as far as the kind of clients you can attract and things like that. But it, wherever you work, it also has some constraints in that there's just some kinds of work that we could never do, that I'm sure you know your structure allows a lot more flexibility and just kind of a different way of interacting with clients.
Absolutely. You know, I think we kind of operate with really three pillars with our clients, and that's one, having the appropriate legal and industry knowledge to handle the work that may be done. We really try to provide an easier experience. And when you're working with a firm that really is myself or Dan or some of our interns, when we have those, you're really not dealing with much of a hierarchy that can slow things down that you see at a lot of firms. And we try to make things easier as well from like a technology standpoint, just to make the client experience easier. And then with a smaller law firm, you know, we just don't have the same overhead that larger law firms do. And that allows us to really set up a pricing model where it's really more about client value than a cost plus model, where a lot of firms, you see them either having their budget and then they set their hourly rates, you know, to make that budget and make a profit above that. We're able to kind of be more flexible in our pricing approach and how we do things and really make sure that whatever service we're providing is what the client really wants and what they really need. So if they don't need a full, you know, if we're doing a Title IX audit and they don't need a full Title IX audit, they need more of an audit of a specific area, we can price things to really reflect what they need rather than just kind of the overall audit itself.
Okay, and your firm is based out of Knoxville and Nashville in Tennessee, but I imagine you represent clients all over, and so how does that work? Do you travel a lot? Is it mostly over, you know, email and conference calls and things like that, or kind of a mix of both, I imagine?
Yeah, with working with colleges and universities primarily, I mean, I've had clients all over the country. So when you're typically doing, you know, either an infractions case or a compliance audit or a Title IX audit or something of that nature, when you're doing that either audit or the investigation, you're always going to be on campus anyway. So it really doesn't matter where I am because I'm always going to go to my client. I've actually, for the college university work, I've never had a client come see me. It's always me going to them because it just makes more sense. So, and then with some of the other work, I mean, obviously with the technology tools today, you can handle, you know, pretty much any matter remotely, or the large majority of matters you can handle remotely because these technologies made communications and just the sharing of documents secure and easy for everybody, even if you're, you know, at a distance. Just like our phone call today. Here in DC and I'm in Tennessee, and we can kind of do all this without being in the same place.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, as a transactional attorney, you know, I don't think there's really, in most cases, a lot of value of being in the same location as long as, you know, the work gets done and you're drafting documents and stuff like that. That's been my experience for sure. So, yeah, maybe if you're actually examining documents in an investigation or something, then, yeah, then that's a scenario where you'd need to travel to the actual university. But yeah, I think you're right. It in most cases, it doesn't really matter where you're located as long as you can do the work.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, so let's go ahead then and talk about the college sports law practice. So you've already touched on this a bit, but what exactly does that, what is a college sports law practice?
I think it can really mean a variety of different practice areas. Just like anybody who says they're a sports lawyer, it's really about the client you're working with and the type of work you're doing for that client. But I think in terms of the types of work that are available in college athletics and the types of work that we do, the first thing is NCAA infractions work. So basically, if you're an institution or an involved party who runs afoul or allegedly runs afoul with NCAA legislation, you're representing either the school or an involved party in that process where they're the defendant. The NCAA would be your prosecutor, and then the Committee on Infractions is your jury or judge or however you want to frame that. So that's one component of our practice. There's also just general NCAA compliance work that can be doing NCAA compliance audits, that can be helping with different types of waivers or reinstatement requests for student athletes. They could be helping businesses who want to work in college athletics really navigate the NCAA rules landscape so they can operate their business in that field in a way where their clients, the schools, aren't going to get in trouble. We do a lot of investigations work, which can be the infractions work, but also Title IX. It could be student athlete abuse issues. It could be employment issues. We do a lot of work in Title IX from the gender equity side of things. So that's basically looking at an athletics program and making sure they're in compliance with Title IX from a participation standpoint, from an athletics aid standpoint, and just from an equitable treatment standpoint. And then you have all your transactional work, which can range from sponsorship deals to promotions compliance to looking at like facility rentals and anything, any sort of transactional work involving the athletic department and institution. Those are kind of the five areas that we work in.
Okay, yeah, and the transactional work, that's I think of interest to me because it's what I do, and also it's interesting to me because when I thought of college sports law practice, I didn't think of that at all. And so as far as a sponsorship agreement or something, that's a scenario where like a university is approached by a sponsor, and then they would reach out to you or another law firm and ask you to help negotiate that and draft it. Is that how that would work?
Yeah, if the institution needed help from outside counsel to help kind of navigate the complexities of that deal, then you would help basically work, negotiate the deal, and then make sure the terms were appropriate for the institution. And that could be a sponsored deal from, you know, one of their facilities to one of their, maybe it's a naming rights for an event they're having or anything of that nature.
Okay. Yeah. Cause when I've looked at the in-house councils at universities, it looks like, you know, you'll see maybe 10 lawyers at a university and maybe five of those are like healthcare and three of those are labor. And then it doesn't seem like there's a lot of actual transactional attorneys based at a university. Is that how it typically is in your experience? Or does, I guess it varies from institution to institution?
Yeah, all institutions are. College athletics is really unique because the work kind of can come from a variety of different people. And all the legal departments are also set up in a lot of different ways. Some of your smaller institutions don't even really have an in-house counsel that's there. They typically will work with just outside counsel that's local. Okay. And then if there's a specialized issue that's like NCAA enforcement work or something like that, or Title IX, then they'll typically try to look for a law firm that specializes in that area. Other you know, kind of your mid-major schools will often have like a general counsel and maybe one or two other people. And then your bigger institutions will have, you know, a full in-house legal team, usually with somebody who's devoted specifically to athletics issues or athletics and then maybe another area. So really it's totally different at every school. And from an attorney's perspective, it's also interesting because I think most of the times when a lawyer is trying to really get a new client, you kind of know who you need to talk to. Usually it's the general counsel of a business or somebody of that nature. Where at a college university, sometimes the decision maker is going to be the general counsel. Sometimes it's going to be the AD. Sometimes it may be the senior compliance person. Sometimes it could be the president or chancellor or the board. It just kind of depends. So it's an interesting from a business development standpoint, trying to figure out, you know, who's the decision maker at a school, and then really making sure you can forge a relationship with that person.
Okay, yeah, no, that is interesting, and it's something I hadn't thought of before, so thanks for that. I guess, stepping back a bit, looking at the general landscape, in your assessment, is there a lot of people working in college sports law, you know, as external counsels who are out there looking for clients, or is it a smaller group? What's your analysis?
I think there's a lot of different either law firms or consulting groups that are doing work in college athletics. I think there's enforcement work and compliance work, you have your same typical firms that you're going to see representing college universities. For Title IX work, the same thing. You have pretty much standard firms that do that type of work or consulting groups that do that type of audit. For the business affairs work, I think you see it more diverse. You see it more spread across, you know, who would be that school's typical counsel on other issues, because it's usually larger firms handling a lot of that work, and they usually have an office somewhere either close to the institution or in-state at least, and they'll be helping with that work. So I think there's a lot of different firms that work in the field. I don't know if there's a lot of firms that have a specialized practice group for college athletics, or who only do college athletics work, or who primarily do college athletics work. I think there's lesser firms that are like that, but I do think there are a lot of opportunities both in private practice and also within an institution's general counsel's office, or even in the athletic department. You'll see a lot of attorneys either serving as compliance officers or athletics liaisons to the general counsel's office, or just in various roles and who have a legal background.
Yeah, no, that's true. Recently at the Sports Lawyers Association conference, I kept talking to young lawyers or law students who are, you know, either working in an athletic department or interning in one or something like that. Doing in compliance is the big thing. Seems like there's a lot of people needed for that as far as just getting bodies doing stuff.
Yeah, I think you see a lot of those job postings now in compliance. They either want a JD or prefer a JD background. I don't know necessarily if that, I think the skill sets transfer, the knowledge, I don't think, and that's not something you're really going to learn in law school, but I think the skill set of just, you know, the discipline attorneys have and just their attention to detail, I think is helpful in compliance and really, really in any aspect of athletics.
Okay. So, and then in for your work that you do, it seems like you represent both NCAA institutions as well as athletes, or is that incorrect?
I primarily work with colleges, universities, and then sometimes coaches or administrators. Usually, okay, if I'm working with a student athlete, it's on behalf of the institution. So if they have a high profile student athlete who they're trying to get reinstated, or who they're trying to get some sort of like eligibility, like waiver completed, something like that, then I'll help the institution with those issues. My practice really isn't devoted to student athletes themselves. There are some excellent attorneys who do work solely with student athletes, though, who help on that end of things.
Yeah, but I'd imagine as far as building a practice, you know, when an athlete comes, it's going to be a discrete issue, and so it's difficult to have kind of a long-standing practice, whereas the institutions constantly have needs and stuff, so it's easier to build a sort of client base and expertise about that.
Yeah, the student athlete work can be it's much more volume based, and it can be difficult, I think, for those firms to sift through cases where there's a viable legal or regulatory claim in cases where there's not. And obviously, as all law firms know, you know, organizational clients, you know, are, like you said, have more steady work because they can be more long-term clients than an individual can be.
Okay. And then, you know, you do a lot of different stuff. Is there a particular type of work that you find most interesting that you do with colleges?
Yeah, I think a lot of it depends on the matter. But, you know, a couple of things that I really enjoy doing. I really enjoy actually doing the Title IX audits. I think they're unique because you really get to know the institution through the documents you're collecting and the interviews you're doing and the student athletes you're having group discussions with. You're really getting to know what that institution is all about. And I think you're also helping on an issue that really matters. There's obviously been a lot of progress in terms of, you know, participation, you know, and opportunities for females in college athletics. but I think there's still a long way to go in that area. So you know you're actually doing something that's really beneficial. I think a lot of the transactional work can also be interesting just because you're really creating, you're helping create a good partnership where both sides can benefit and really create a long-lasting partnership there. And I think that can be a lot of fun if you have a good relationship with a brand partner. And fractions cases are interesting, but they also can be, you know, highly stressful because a lot of times, you know, either the reputation of the school or the individual is on the line. If it's an individual, their job could be on the line or their future career could be on the line. So even though they're interesting, you know, the stakes also are such where, you know, your clients usually can be very, very stressed out because it's just they're a big deal. So those are interesting, but probably not as enjoyable as creating a partnership or something like that is. That's kind of the difference there.
Yeah, no, and I mean, it sounds like one of the benefits about what you do is getting kind of a broader perspective and seeing all these different kinds of things. I imagine that makes life a little interesting.
Yeah, especially when you're working with schools, you know, working with a FBS school on one matter and then turning around and doing like a Title IX audit for a private Division III school. I mean, just the difference in how those departments are run and the roles that those administrators and executives have, and then just the whole student-athlete experience. I mean, they're all so different. Even though it's all college athletics, it's just completely different. And it's really interesting to see how those campuses operate and also just the different issues that they have to navigate and how they manage risk and how they find value in legal services and kind of how you can fit your practice to really make sure that they're getting what they need, because what a Division I school is going to need from you might not be what a Division III school is going to need for you in terms of, you know, value and how they look at, you know, legal risk.
Okay. Yeah, no, thanks. That's very interesting. Okay, so we're getting close to wrapping up here. And, you know, one thing I've done, you know, a number of podcast interviews about college sports. And one big thing that always comes up is, you know, the changing landscape of college sports, the potential further compensation of student athletes and things like that. You know, obviously there's a lot going on in college sports right now. And so I don't know if you see any of these potential changes affecting your work, and if so, how you plan on approaching that.
Yeah, I think most people realize that change is inevitable. Now, what the extent of that change is going to be is, I think, the question. And then whether the change is proactive by the institutions in the NCAA or reactive based on a court case is up in the air. And kind of where all that's going to go, we really don't know. How I see whatever changes coming are affecting my work, I think it would change the nature of some aspects of my practice. I mean, obviously, if there's not as many rules based on, you know, extra benefits and things like that, or the rules change, then that could limit work in that area. On the other hand, maybe it expands work in that area because of that change. It's really hard to tell. But I think the reality is, you know, there's always going to be a need for people in any industry to really be able to analyze the industry, to know the industry, and really to be able to help organizations make good strategic decisions, taking into account risk. So however the industry shifts, I think there's still going to be a niche there for people who want to work in college sports that are lawyers. It just might not be exactly what we're seeing today. But what that change is going to be, I think time will tell.
yeah, hard to predict that, obviously. But that's why, you know, it's important. Like you have at your firm a dedicated practice where you're aware of anything that might change and analyzing how that would affect things, and then you can provide further service to clients in the future despite changes. You understand the field, so I think that's, like you're saying, that seems to be the key. Regardless of any change, you know, everything's changing in life. So that's why you try and gain some expertise in any specific area.
Exactly.
Okay. So, you know, this podcast is listened to by a lot of law students, young lawyers interested in working in sports. Do you have any advice about what people can do to try and carve out a career in college sports law?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd probably say a lot of the same things that they've already heard. You know, networking is obviously very important. I think the biggest mistake that I made as a law student or as a younger attorney was I would do the networking, but I wasn't always as good at maintaining some of those relationships or following up. So if you're going to network, make sure that you kind of develop that relationship beyond just meeting somebody, because, you know, this is really all about relationships, and the more you get to know somebody, the better relationship they're going to have with you, and the more kind of helpful you can be to each other as time progresses. So one, network and follow up and create good, solid relationships. And number two, really just know your stuff. Understand kind of the industry itself. Understand the various facets of that industry from a legal standpoint. If you want to work in compliance, understand, you know, how compliance operations work and what the legislation is, and how you can be creative within the legislative to get things done for the institution. From a Title IX perspective, you know, understand how Title IX works, understand, you know, the three-prong test, understand athletics aid, understand how equitable treatment and disparity analysis works, and be able to help institutions make good decisions, you know, based off that information. So really understand the industry, but also understand, like, how you can use that information to benefit either your employer or your client, because just knowing how something works from a legal standpoint really doesn't matter if you can't do something based on the information. So if you're a compliance person and a coach comes to you and you just say, well, you can't do that because it's against the rules, you're not really helping that coach. You need to figure out what they can, what their intent was, what their goal was with what they wanted to do, and then how can they can accomplish that same thing within their rules. And that's really what I think being a good lawyer is all about, is looking at what the law or the regulatory framework is and helping your client or employer make good decisions without running afoul of those things, even if it wasn't what they originally intended on doing specifically.
Yeah, no, that's great. You know, I kind of laugh when I do these interviews, and I always, you know, try to end with a question like that. You know, it's kind of a twist on the same thing every time, right? Is that you need to understand the industry. You know, you need to, you know, you added something that I think is important. It just, again, a general life, you know, skill is not just identifying a problem, but understanding the client, what the client wants, and then finding a solution to that problem. Because, you know, a lot of people can recognize problems, but to provide real value is seeking ways around those problems and helping your clients achieve their goals. So yeah, no, that's a good insight, I think, that you added. And the stuff about networking as well, that's, you know, I remember when I was a law student, you know, being afraid of reaching out to people, oh, I'm going to bother this person or whatever. But, like, you know, you're only going to bother them more as you get older and stuff. So you certainly, as a law student, this is this time of life where it makes a lot of sense to reach out to people and then, you know, build that relationship over time, and then it won't be so much of a bother down the road.
Exactly. And if the reality is you'll reach out to a lot of people over your career, and some people will get back to you, some people won't. It's you can't really take offense to it. Some people are kind of just more willing to be helpful or have more time than others. And, you know, I think it's, you just can't really take offense to it and make it stop, you know, stop your efforts in doing so. And then once you do, you know, make it, make sure that you remember what it was like being the younger attorney and being a law student, and make sure you pay it forward, because, you know, we're all going to have breaks and opportunities at different times. And I think it's really important to be able to pay it forward in that way, and really help people kind of progress, because the reality is there's enough work for everybody and there's enough positions for everybody if they want to work hard enough. So I think it's up to people who are more established to really help the harder workers get to where they need to be, you know, by just being a good resource for them.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you've certainly been very helpful to me in recording this podcast. And I think it's been, you know, really interesting. And so I'm excited to have people listen to this and learn more about what you do and how they can, you know, try and find their own way in this area. So thanks for doing this interview. I don't know if there's anything else you want to say before we wrap up.
No, I think we covered most of it. If anybody has any questions for me, just feel free to shoot me an email or give me a call at the office, and I'll be happy to chat.
Yeah. So yeah, this has been Justin Sievert from Sievert Worley LLC. I'll include a link to the website and all that stuff in the notes. And yeah, definitely easy to get a hold of. So feel free to reach out. And yeah, thanks for coming on the podcast. And we'll hope to speak to you again soon.
All right. Anytime. Take care.
This has been an episode of the Sports Law Biz podcast. This podcast is available through the Sports Law Biz website or through iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and YouTube. before wrapping things up, I'd like to thank some people. First of all, I'd like to thank my friend, Lieb Montoya, for designing the Sports Law Biz podcast logo, as well as the Sports Law Biz blog logo. His artistic ability certainly surpasses mine. If interested, you can check out more of Lieb's work on Instagram and Twitter. His handle is at Lieb Montoya in both places. That's at L-I-B Montoya. Additionally, I'd like to thank the musical artist for providing this theme music that you're listening to right now. The artist is a band called The Losers. The album is entitled Young, Tough, Terrible. The track is Sports with an exclamation point. The label is Needle Drop Co. This music is available through a Creative Commons license of Attribution Non-Commercial 3.0 Unported. This podcast was produced and recorded by myself, Peter Ott. And you can reach me at my personal Twitter handle, at PeterJOTT, through the Sports Law Biz Twitter handle, at SportsLawBiz, or through email at SportsLawBizBlog@gmail.com. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you are interested in contributing to either the Sports Law Biz blog or podcast, definitely reach out to me. I love to talk to people about these issues, and I know I can use all the help I can get. Finally, I'd like to thank you for listening to this podcast. Hopefully it was enjoyable. If so, please spread the word and let your friends and colleagues know about it. Leave a review on iTunes. Any way you can spread the news about this podcast would be greatly appreciated. That's our episode today. Tune in next time to learn more about the law and business of sports. Looking forward to discussing it with you on the Sports Law Biz podcast.